Hello, this is your Polycast for Friday, April 24th, your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio newsroom. On today's edition, the Senate votes to allow gun silencers despite a veto threat from the governor, and the debate over a soccer stadium in Minneapolis. Governor Mark Dayton has declared a state of emergency to strengthen the state's response to an unprecedented avian influenza outbreak. In just 7 weeks, the disease has struck 46 Minnesota farms, including two more announced yesterday. Minnesota farmers have lost more than 2.5 million birds. Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker took his likely presidential campaign to Minnesota yesterday. He held private meetings with a business group and a conservative group. As Tom Scheck reports, he also met briefly behind closed doors with a group of Republican lawmakers at the Capitol.
After his meeting with lawmakers, Walker defended his state's economy compared to Minnesota's. This exchange with reporters was captured by Fox 9 News.
We have for many years, for several decades, been higher than Minnesota's unemployment rate. But you look at where we were at and where we started and where we're at today, there's been a dramatic change.
Walker said he won't announce his plans to run for president until the Wisconsin Assembly adjourns in June. Democrats are welcoming Walker to Minnesota by pointing out that Minnesota's economy, under DFL Governor Mark Dayton, is performing much better than Wisconsin's under Walker. Tom Scheck, Minnesota Public Radio News, at the Capitol.
Governor Dayton says he will veto any legislation that would legalize the use of gun silencers. Dayton said the Second Amendment doesn't refer to the right to bear silencers.
Suppression of gun noise is heightens the risk to law enforcement officers and also to innocent bystanders on the scene or in the neighborhood. You know, the loud report of a gunshot is something that alerts people that something's going on.
Supporters of what they call suppressors say they reduce the sound of shots but don't eliminate the sound. They say they're needed to protect hearing when people are firing at a gun range or hunting. Just a few hours after the governor's veto threat, the state Senate passed a public safety bill that includes a provision to legalize gun silencers. It was a surprise development, as majority Democrats had shown little interest in changing the state's gun laws. The overall bill contains a variety of policy changes. It would mandate external investigations for officer-involved deaths, set ground rules for law enforcement's use of drones, and restore voting rights to felons after they're released from prison. The House already passed a bill this month on a bipartisan vote that would lift the state's longtime ban on silencers for firearms. Another provision in that Senate public safety bill would spend $250,000 to develop strategies to combat recruitment of Minnesota residents by militant groups like ISIS and Al-Shabaab. The Senate voted to add the language just days after federal authorities charged six men with trying to join ISIS. Republican Senator Warren Limmer of Maple Grove said he thinks the money is needed to prevent young people from being recruited to radical organizations.
We know, after reading not only past news accounts but even recent ones, that there's very definite threats in the world, and sometimes the world is not an easy or safe place to be. And unfortunately, I think that whirlwind is coming our direction.
No one spoke in opposition to the amendment. The Minnesota House is considering a budget bill that also includes money for the proposal. Minnesota lawmakers are considering a big reduction in the amount of taxes owed when wealthy people die. House Republicans included a change to the estate tax in their $2 billion package of tax cuts. Democrats are critical of most of the bill, and some say this particular change would cost too much money to help a very small number of Minnesota families. Tim Pugmire has the story.
House Tax Chair Greg Davids describes Minnesota as an expensive place to die. That's why he supports raising Minnesota's estate tax exemption to match the federal tax code. David said he doesn't want people moving to other states to protect their assets.
To me, the estate tax is a very, very unfair tax. People have already paid taxes on this money, and now after they pass, the government comes and says, okay, you're dead, but we're going to get some more money from you. That's just wrong. That's not Minnesota nice. A lot of states don't even have an estate tax.
Right now, Minnesota's estate tax kicks in when an individual's wealth tops $1.4 million. That's scheduled to increase to $2 million by 2018. The tax currently affects less than 3% of estates in Minnesota. The House tax bill would raise the threshold to $2 million this year. It would make additional annual adjustments so that by 2018, the tax wouldn't kick in on estates worth less than $5 million. David said the changes would benefit many farmers and small business owners, not just rich people.
It affects maybe not that many Minnesotans, but if a Minnesotan, if a farmer wants to keep his farm in the family, rather than having to sell half of it to give to the government, this is a very good provision.
The House is expected to vote next week on the tax bill. Nonpartisan House researchers estimate that under the legislation, fewer than 700 estates a year would have to pay the tax. The current number is about 800. The Minnesota Department of Revenue estimates the two-year cost of the estate tax exemption at nearly $172 million when it's fully implemented. DFL Representative Carly Moline of Hibbing said she thinks that money could be better spent on schools and other government programs rather than a tax break for so few people.
Basically, this is a huge tax cut for the wealthiest estates in Minnesota. Most people don't inherit a $5 million estate. Minnesota has one of the most progressive estate taxes because, you know, we recognize that most people don't have that kind of wealth.
Some Democrats disagree.
In my district, I have a lot of high-income people, but that isn't the point. The point is, do they have assets?
DFL Representative Ron Earhart of Edina sponsored the original estate tax measure that was incorporated into the tax bill. DFL Senator Melissa Franzen of Edina sponsored a companion bill in the Senate. Earhart said the tax is an unnecessary burden.
People think they ought to be able to pass the whole world to the next generation. And if you do some estate planning, you can do a lot of that. But when you have the estate tax here and somebody else doesn't, and it's easy to move, you know, some things you can't move. You can't move businesses that are manufacturing. You can't move farmland.
DFL Senator Rod Scoy of Clearbrook, the chair of the Senate Tax Committee, said he's been looking for years at ways to improve the estate tax, but Scoy said he doesn't like the House approach of phasing in tax reductions over several years.
My overall concern is that not only are in their bill are they spending more than the surplus in tax reductions, they're passing those on into future years so that the overall impact is, you know, twice or more of what the surplus is. So while we understand the estate tax provision, the phasing in of it is problematic.
Scoy said he plans to unveil the Senate tax bill next week. He wouldn't say if it will include any estate tax provisions. DFL Governor Mark Dayton is proposing only a minor technical change related to estate taxes that would cost the state $50,000 a year. Tim Pugmire, Minnesota Public Radio News at the Capitol.
Minneapolis Mayor Betsy Hodges has tried to close the door on giving a property tax break to a proposed Major League Soccer stadium, but many members of the city council say they're open to the idea. Curtis Gilbert has details.
Ready?
While the players and coaches of Minnesota United have been gearing up for their home opener this weekend, team president Nick Rogers has been trying to build political support for the stadium he wants to build in Minneapolis. Rogers says most of the city's elected leaders have been receptive.
The majority of people that we talk to about this are very positive about the plan and what it can mean for Minneapolis. Obviously, the mayor is not in that majority, but that doesn't necessarily prevent us from moving forward with what we want to do.
A team of investors, led by former United Health Group CEO Bill McGuire, wants to build a $150 million stadium near the Minneapolis Farmers Market. The team would also pay a $100 million franchise fee to join Major League Soccer. The investors plan to cover those costs themselves, but they want to avoid paying sales tax on the construction materials, and they're asking for a property tax exemption, something the other major league stadiums in Minnesota get automatically, because they're publicly owned. For Mayor Betsy Hodges, waiving property taxes is a non-starter.
If there were some other developer, some other project, who came to the city and said, we want to put a $250 million development at one of the places in the city that is most ripe for economic development, on which we expect to make a significant profit, and all we need is to never ever pay property taxes on the site of that development, they would be laughed out of the city.
But many members of the city council aren't laughing. Council President Barbara Johnson says she's keeping an open mind because the stadium would attract more people to visit Minneapolis.
I think it's important for people to have many, many, many reasons to come to our city, you know, including going to the theaters, including going to professional sports events. We're a regional center, and so if soccer is going to happen, I want it to happen in my city.
Councilmember Lene Palmisano agrees.
I'm very open to this. To me, this is an investment, and it could be a way to create a really unique public and private partnership that benefits the city in a way that we haven't before.
Palmisano says the city could stand to gain more in sales tax revenue from ticket, food, and beer sales at the soccer park than it's currently drawing in property taxes from the site. And Councilmember Jacob Fry questions whether economic development will happen in the farmers market area if the stadium isn't built.
We're talking about a $250 million private investment in a part of town, the north side, that has gotten little to no private investment in the last 50 or 60 years here. So I don't want to shut the door entirely on anything.
With support for the stadium growing on the city council, Blong Yang, who represents the north side, says he might even be able to marshal the 9 votes needed to override a mayoral veto.
That's within the realm of possibilities.
That's because only a few council members have come out as strongly against the proposed tax break as Mayor Hodges. Lisa Bender is one of them.
I guess I'm surprised a little bit at the speed to which people have seemed to agree publicly to a deal that we don't have, at least I don't have, any details that show economic benefit to the city.
Bender was elected to the city council in 2013 after unseating Meg Tuthill, who supported subsidies for the Viking Stadium. Bender says that vote was a big issue for voters in her ward.
My constituents didn't send me here to make a less bad deal for them. They sent me here to be a good steward of their tax dollars.
Before Bender and the rest of the city council vote on anything, though, they'll need to see what happens at the state legislature. Minneapolis would likely need the state's permission to waive property taxes for the proposed stadium. Curtis Gilbert, Minnesota Public Radio News, Minneapolis.
And that's your Polycast for this Friday, your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio newsroom. Have a great weekend, and I will see you again here on Monday.